Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by WordPress. WordPress powers 28% of all websites, including mine. Get 15% off your new website at WordPress.com/NSS. That's WordPress.com/NSS.
Speaking emoji, going macro, and sharing iCloud accounts live from the Twit Eastside Studios, it's the new screensavers.
Nice job, mm-hmm. Harry. And hello, Jason Snell.
Hello, Leo Laporte.
From beautiful Arcadia Bay, Oregon.
People out there know what's up.
They know what's up.
That's right.
They're connected.
Nerd shirts.
I'm Leo Laporte and the new screensavers. This is episode 115 for July 29th, 2017. Yeah. That means we've been doing this 2 years plus.
Yeah. That's pretty good. What happens when you do a podcast every week, right?
It does add up.
It does.
How many shows do you do now?
Too many to count, maybe 10, 11 podcasts. They're not all weekly. The Incomparable, Upgrade, Download, Robot or Not.
Install, Uninstall, Insert.
I keep joking about Sideload. What's
side
that going to be about?
Be
I don't even
show.
Know what that's going
to
be.
I'd listen. Right? We can listen to Sideload. Jay, you find Jason's work at sixcolors.com. Of course, he was the editor-in-chief of Macworld Magazine, IDG's executive editor, and he's been around the block a few times. He
few
even
times.
Fills in for me on the Tech Guy show.
Thanks for letting me sit
Love
in your
it.
Seat, sit in your chair.
Everybody says what a good job you do.
That was very nice of them
making
to say
me
that.
A little upset.
No, your job is very hard. Turns out, Leo, now that I've done your job for a week, really hard. I appreciate it. I appreciate
That's not
you.
That hard. That's not that hard. It's
you got to push buttons and
Don't
stuff.
Don't you think it's fun?
It is fun. It's a lot of fun.
People say sometimes to me, when are you going to retire? And I will retire when it's not fun, but I've been doing it for 40 years and it's been fun so far. So at least another 40, I think. When I'm 100, maybe I'll start to slow down. I like it. And I love it that we brought back the screensavers. The idea behind this show is it's kind of a tech variety show. That was always the idea behind it, a variety of different kinds of tech. And we have a lot for you. We're going to talk once again to Jeremy Bursch. He is on the Unicode Emoji Committee. This is serious stuff. We thank Jeremy because he brought us the milkshake emoji. He brought us the dumpling emoji. Mm. But emojis never rest. It's time for a new batch, and we're going to take a look at the new proposed emojis and talk about some of the controversy, the infighting that goes on.
That's a committee I want to be on, by the way.
Does that sound like fun?
Deciding like exactly what you want to describe about a vomiting face emoji.
That's the funniest thing, because I imagine, the Unicode Consortium is very serious. It's about what's in the Unicode specification, what character sets, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's this part of it that talks about emojis with equal seriousness.
I think so.
Well, you can't have green vomit. So we'll find out.
It's fun.
Yeah. We got DP Review joining us once again. Actually, we're doing macro photography. If you've never done macro photography, we're going to find out how you can do it inexpensively and get great results. We're going to actually learn a thing or two. Take pictures of bugs. Mm. Jason and I are going to answer some tough questions. They brought all these Apple questions.
Yeah, and I just threw them over to me.
I said, these are too hard. Ask Jason. I have no idea. Megan Maroney will help you turn your tweet storms into blog posts. Who do we know who tweet storms? And then Jason Howell has some custom Google Assistant commands. Brian Burnett is going to show you where to stick your GoPro. This is going to be a great show. We're going to have a lot of fun. But let's get started with the big stories of the day. Speaking of tweets, the president tweeted that Apple Computer was going to build three big, beautiful plants in the United States. I don't know where he got that idea. I don't think Tim Cook has ever said that we're going to do that.
It's Tim Cook's new office at Apple Park. It's going to have three big, beautiful new plants in it.
Ficus Benjaminas, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that. Well, that's the interesting thing is that Foxconn shortly after said, yes, we are. We're going to build a $10 billion plant in Wisconsin. 13,000 people, I think. Did they say something like that? The thing that's interesting about this is Foxconn isn't Apple, but they make the iPhone in China. They have already built plants in Brazil because Brazil has very restrictive tariffs. You can't really buy a phone that's not made in Brazil.
Apple only owns one factory of its own, in fact, which is in Cork, Ireland, I think. All the rest of them are subcontractors.
What does the Cork plant make?
I think it makes iMacs for the European market, but it's Apple's been in Cork a very long time. This goes back. I had a friend who was a software developer. They used to have an OS, you know, software development group in Cork, too, and the factory's still there.
All the money's still there, too.
But, and the money that isn't going Apple for their European
money.
Taxes. Exactly right.
I thought the factory might be like a money packing plant.
No, it predates, as far as we can tell, it predates their tax strategies.
Yeah.
But usually it's something like Foxconn. It's another subcontractor. Yeah. Even if they bankroll it, they have the subcontractor build and run the factory.
Foxconn's going to build one in India because they have similarly restrictive tariffs in India. But the I think part of the point that Apple's always made is, well, this is just an assembly, a final assembly factory. The parts come from all over the world. The intellectual property comes mostly from the United States. There are certainly a lot of people employed in the U.S. thinking about stuff that goes into the iPhone.
Well, the glass on your iPhone is made in the U.S. The
Corning.
The processor is, I believe, made in the U.S.
It's not made by Samsung Korea.
I think some of those processors are made in
TSMC's
in Austin,
in Taiwan.
Right?
What happened to the Mac Pro plant? That was the big
deal.
The
Mac Pro plant is still there, but the problem is what happened to the Mac Pro.
Nobody's bought. They made enough.
Well, my
In fact, it never was very busy, was it?
And my understanding is that they had some issues with that plant as well. So there's some questions. Maybe they learned something from that about what is good to build in America or assemble in America and what isn't. But it's interesting to see this. There's got to be something to this, right? I don't believe
that
he completely made it up. Obviously, there was
the funny thing is the Wisconsin plant's going to make TVs for Sharp, not Apple stuff.
Right. But it may be that there is something going on where there are subcontractors or there are plans. It could also be some crossed wires about, like, Apple has a bunch of huge data centers all over the all over
North
the country,
Carolina.
North Carolina being the most obvious one, but there are others. So that could be part of it too. There Apple, you know, the perception that Apple is only doing things in China is not accurate.
Right.
But that is where most of these products for the US market get assembled. So
frankly,
they could be building some things in the
US. You'd be hard pressed to buy a phone in the US that wasn't either made in China, South Korea, or Taiwan.
That's true.
They're all made in
And it's because of the supply chain.
Malaysia or Singapore.
So you'd need to either ship all those parts, which would be much less efficient,
exactly.
or you'd need to try and kickstart a new supply chain, which
That's
would be not impossible, but that would be very hard.
A challenge. Speaking of Apple sad news, the Nano has shuffled off this mortal coil. It was either that or Nano, 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 hey, goodbye.
That's not bad.
I like that too, right? It's the end of the Nano and the shuffle. Who has a shuffle?
I love those little shuffles, but the problem is that everybody's using subscription music services now, and the iPod stuff was never compatible with that stuff.
You need Wi-Fi, don't you?
Yeah, you need software that can decrypt those, you know, subscription package music files. And it's sad, but Apple cannibalized itself, right? Like, even if you're all Apple, you're not using an iPod probably anymore. And one of the things that I've been thinking of this last week is I hear from runners who love the
That's
Nano.
That's where
right?
I see the shuffle in the Nanos in the gym.
I think Apple believes in the long term, what's the successor to the iPod Nano? And the answer is, I've got a touchscreen device that stores music and plays music via Bluetooth on my wrist, which is my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So that is maybe the future of this sort of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe someday down the road, AirPods will even just store music or stream it wirelessly, and you won't even need the watch. You'll just need your earphones. But, you know, it's the end of an era. It's a little sad. I loved that shuffle, especially. The new Nano was really weird because it was like a fake iPod Touch with sort of a weird pseudo interface. But the shuffle was really great and simple.
And
fun.
There is nothing as inexpensive. The iPod Touches will start at $199.
Yeah, and they're old tech. They're a couple years old, two, 3 years since they've updated them. And it's a question about how long they will survive. They seem to fill a niche for Apple, sort of like the Mac Mini, where they might as well keep it around, but it's never going to be a priority for them.
Oh, that's too bad, because I love the Mac Mini. That's kind of a shame.
Yeah, well,
I wish they would.
I'm a believer. I think they will. I bought a, this is a story for another time, but I bought an Intel Nook. Which
the
is
a new unit of computing. Yeah. They look like they're like, basically a copy.
Yeah, imagine a Mac Mini that's the size of an Apple TV. I think that would be awesome.
I use
I hope they do it.
Running Linux as a server in my house. It makes an excellent server.
Now I'm working on doing one for my house as a server too. It's pretty great.
Yeah. Finally, Friday, the Model 3 officially arrived, Tesla's latest. Starts at $35,000, but
and goes up quickly from there.
Yeah, you're going to want to add. Well, say you want to add self-driving. That's going to be another $5,000 to $10,000, depending on what hardware.
At $35,000, it would be the most expensive car I would ever have bought. And
it'll probably be $50,000. The ones that we've seen are
realistically, you're not going to get a Tesla and then say no, I don't want any of those features.
But think how much money you'll save on gas.
That's true, but your electric bill's going to.
Skyrockets.
It goes up a bit. I just bought an electric car, and it goes up.
Goes up
some,
but
it's. I think in the long run, depending on where you live in the United States and what the mix is in the electrical grid, and what your rates.
Well,
you're
put in solar panels, and that was kind of a hand in hand with getting the Teslas. We make our own electricity, and that helped a lot with the cost of the Tesla. It's a luxury. But I tell you, once you drive an electric vehicle, you probably agree with me. What did you get?
It's a Leaf.
Once you get one, you never want to go back.
No, we drive our minivan now, and I just think this gas car is terrible.
These gas cars are so sluggish. You put your foot on the pedal, and then it's no fun.
No, but it'll be interesting to see how they can scale. In fact, they did a chart, which is hilarious, of how they're going to have to scale the growth. Because Tesla has never really made very many cars in terms of volume, and they expect this to be, I think they're going to quintuple their volume in order to get this thing out there. And they put up a chart that literally had time and volume and a stack of cars. It's like, what are the charts? There's time. No, that's a good one. That's got labels on it. The other one just says time at the bottom. And it's a question about over time.
It's kind of a meaningless curve.
Over time, there will be more cars in the stack of cars. That's all we know. It's a very Jeff Bezos kind of chart.
Elon did say it's a manufacturing nightmare. He said this is going to be hell.
This is
I mean, there's several possibilities. One, it's going to be fine, but he wants to lowball everybody, and under promise, over deliver.
That would be a first strategy for him, but
he doesn't usually do that. The other is he knows it's going to be bad. They're not going to get very many out, and there's going to be defects, so he just wants to prepare people for that.
Yeah. But it is make or break for them. I really do believe it. Like, this is their moment where they said, we are going to mass produce a car, and we're going to make it work. And this is now they need to do it. They need to execute on manufacturing cars. Nobody doubts the quality of the technology here.
No.
Can they execute it shipping hundreds of thousands of cars?
And he has one of the things that makes these electric cars so expensive, it made your Leaf more expensive. It was about $30,000, $35,000.
I bought mine. See, pro tip, I bought a used that came back in a lease. And,
oh, that's smart.
It was a good deal. Yeah.
So, but they start, if they're brand new, around the same price.
$30,000, $35,000,
And that it's the batteries that's so expensive.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons Musk has built this giant factory in Nevada, the Gigafactory. And that has brought prices on lithium-ion batteries down a lot.
And it spurred development, talking about China again, it spurred development of Chinese battery factories too. So there's going to be a global race to produce car batteries cheaply.
And we all benefit because there's batteries. It's not just car battery, there's lithium-ion in everything we use.
If you set up solar, you know, even Elon Musk is doing that. You put batteries in your house.
The power wall.
And that way you can keep your solar in the daytime can power your house at night without going back to the grid.
Yep.
Pretty great.
The power wall, which I am on the list to buy, but I've never heard from anybody, is expensive. It's like $6,000, but it's essentially the battery pack in a Tesla on the wall.
On your wall. And
I've been told I could use my Tesla if I got an inverter. I could use the Tesla to power the house.
Power your house, sure.
I'm not sure I'm going to do that, but it's interesting that you can do that.
But it's a great idea. I had a friend who lost power for a week during Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah.
And he had solar panels on his roof. But they had no power because they didn't have an inverter and a system and batteries.
Right.
And, you know, it makes sense that this is where it's going to go. More solar is going in already. You put batteries in the mix. Use the same technology used for electric cars.
Right.
This is clearly where it's going.
Yeah. I just like driving mine.
Day.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up, Jeremy Burge is here. We're going to talk about the new emojis, the battle. The battle for lobster is next. And he's seen the Emoji Movie, so we can get his review of a movie with the lowest rating on Rotten Tomatoes
I have ever seen.
You can't go to zero on Rotten Tomatoes, but they got really close.
Battle Lobster, like an Iron Chef episode, by the way. I don't know
what it's used for. But first, a word from our sponsor and my web host, WordPress.com. So many sites run on WordPress. Some of the biggest sites on the internet, like Quartz.com, which is a wonderful site. Remember when it came out, everybody said, look at the modern state-of-the-art design. It's WordPress. My site, LeoLaporte.com, not nearly as fancy, but I love, there's a picture of me with the old call for help crew. I love, and look at the stats I get from WordPress.com. This is fantastic. You can find out where all of your visitors come from, what they click, what they stay on. This is the blogging platform. And the thing I love about it, I've always loved WordPress. I ran a self-hosted WordPress for almost a decade. The thing I love about WordPress is the community at WordPress.com. They keep it up to date. They update all the plugins I use, and there are just as many wonderful plugins as there are for the self-hosted WordPress. But they also introduced me to a giant community. I have 500,000 followers at WordPress.com. It's my biggest social network. I love that. I want you to try WordPress, whether it's for your personal blog, your business site, or both. You'll make a big impact when you build on WordPress.com. It's easy to get started. Just go to WordPress.com/NSS, click the Get Started button. You get choose from hundreds of themes. They have a free tier. They also have very affordable paid tiers. They have professional tiers. I am on the business tier. And the best thing is you're going to get 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to our site, WordPress.com/NSS. Create your website. Pick the plan that's right for you. Save 15%. WordPress.com. Come see why this is a stat that just blows my mind. 28% of all websites run on WordPress, including LeoLaporte.com. I love WordPress. You will too. Try it today and get 15% off. WordPress.com/NSS. We should walk over and talk about emojis.
All right. Is there a walking emoji?
Yeah. Oh, there is, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's do it.
But apparently one of the battles is hiking. Is there a hiking emoji? Jeremy, it's great to see you.
Hey.
Welcome back to the new Screensavers, Jeremy Burge.
Jeremy. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you again.
Let me get your title right. You're on the Emoji Committee of the Unicode Consortium?
Yeah. Emoji Subcommittee. But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
You're also on the Unicode Board.
I'm not on the Unicode board. I'm a member of the subcommittee, and I join the technical committee meetings. There's so many layers. There's layers upon layers.
It's a global
organization. Who are these people? What is Unicode, and who are these people, and why is this a big deal?
I mean, Unicode's been around, like, 25 years
It started with ASCII. Remember ASCII, the American Standard for Communication Interchange or something?
And it turned out what happens if you've got characters that Americans didn't build into their computer.
Arabic. Yeah. You could only have 256 characters because it was an 8-bit code. So Unicode is 32-bit.
And now, there's a whole bunch of 64-bit blocks. So you've got millions. You've got millions. There's no limit. Every block is huge. So you get 64-bit per block. So we've got unlimited, as many as you need.
So it's almost like the segmented memory in the Intel architecture. You can trigger a block.
There's so many blocks available. We can have as many emojis as you want. The issue is really just how do you pick them?
Don't say that!
I'm so sorry.
Because the whole reason there's a battle over emojis is scarcity. But if you could have any emoji you want... Oh, I know why the issue. Apple, Twitter, Facebook, Google, all the companies have to have their own images.
Yeah.
So you don't want a million emojis.
And you don't supply those images. They're designers, or they have to hire designers to make every new emoji on every platform.
New one, and they need to come up with a UI to pick it that's not insane.
Right.
All these autocomplete...
It's already insane. I go through my emoji picker, and it's just like I can't even... Just the smiley faces.
Yeah. Well, Google's replacing its little thumb emojis now with normal round faces, right?
The gumdrops are gone.
Gumdrops are gone. Yeah. People... they got a bit of backlash, but really I think it's the minority. Like, people kind of went out and said, we love the gumdrops, bring them back. But really, I think most users just want it to look like iOS.
Does the emoji subcommittee keep track of emoji use, like...
which emojis are popular, who uses them, things like that?
Yeah, that's a pretty big part of any like proposal. If you want to put together a new emoji proposal, it's pretty important to say, is this even a category that's used? If you suggest a symbol, it's probably not going to get up because nobody uses the symbols.
Right.
So you want to say, this is a new face or this is a new gesture, and look at all these other gestures. They're used so much, so therefore this one has at least a chance.
Interesting. Yeah. You also have to make it international.
Mm-hmm.
Food, that happens a lot with food, where the initial set of food emojis were very specific.
They were Japanese.
And exactly right. And so now we're starting to see that spread around where you get a taco and...
Fleshing it out. Right.
Exactly.
Is there any new food on the way?
Yeah, I mean, this year, the new list, I don't know whether anyone's got the new list coming up, but mango is a big one on the
mango.
New food.
Mango. Everybody loves mangoes, right?
So that's, I know when they did the stats on that, the proposal for the mango shows a comparison to other fruits. So,
Now, before you scroll by that, go back a little bit, Brian. So this is... an image that is kind of the reference image, proposed image?
This is just whoever proposed the emoji. Okay. You have to show that it can be drawn.
There's this text description as well, right?
Right. You want to make the case to say, look, here's roughly what it looks like. Because if you couldn't draw it in the first place, then it's not even going to get considered, right? If you came up with a theoretical concept.
Abstract concept, yeah.
Are there other fruit emojis now? I mean, is mango being left out? Is there a durian emoji?
Kiwi fruit got added last year, so that's there. So we've been fleshing out. I mean, fruits are a bit easier because you can see stats on consumption.
The apple is probably the most popular in North America.
Right, there's like sales figures. You can go into all this stuff, whereas when you get to faces, it's difficult. I really like, actually, I don't know whether it's on there, but there's one for a bone.
A what?
A bone emoji.
Yes. It's like a dog bone.
And I really like that. They got some stats on
There's
an ape with a bone.
And you've got expected usage level, which is fun. But then
this is what
a proposal looks like. This one's by Jane Solomon from dictionary.com, I saw. And she's got some great, you know, statistics on different metaphors. And
I agree with her. Bone would be good.
So, this is fun. Boning is a euphemism.
Can anybody submit a proposal like this? Or in practice, is it a very specific group of people who submit these?
In practice, it's a specific group of people, but anyone can. It's just a lot of effort. You saw that. Right. There's graphs. You need to make an argument for it, and you can't just say, hello, I would like this emoji.
Right. So the people who want that hiking emoji need to prove their case if they want a hiker to go alongside the walker.
Because there's already a walker. What do you need a hiker for? There's already a walker.
The thing you don't want to do, a lot of people find the least popular emoji and go, this is better than that. But that doesn't convince anyone. No. Don't show us an unpopular emoji and say it's better, but find a popular one.
We can all agree that Mountain Tramway is not widely loved.
Right.
That's a hangover from Japan.
Yeah.
Mountain Tramway, there's Mountain Railway, there's Monorail, there are so many, and it's because of,
suspension,
lots of railways.
Railway.
Exactly right. Yeah. So one of the big stories in emoji recently has been modifiers. So the idea that a lot of occupations that used to be one gender or another can now be switched around.
I think you said Google had a big hand in that.
Yeah, Google was one. There were different proposals, but Google was the one that really just came to the table with images, with the whole set to go, look, we want to introduce genders and new professions that also support genders.
And now we also have different skin shades, which is a really important thing.
Yeah.
And one of the cool things about how this is put together for nerds who care about this stuff, which I do, is the way it works in Unicode is you have a symbol and then a modifier. So instead of having a male astronaut and a female astronaut, you have an astronaut and then a gender modifier, and then the operating system goes, oh, I know what image to put here.
Right.
Which is cool.
And except confusingly, when you look at some of them, they're done in different ways. But effectively.
And on different platforms, the default is different.
Oh, so now we have a woman levitating, not just a guy.
This is out of Unicode spec. Facebook did this in their most recent update that for whatever reason...
It's like Amy Winehouse floating.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's cool. They don't need to stick to the spec for this because they have this made a female version.
She doesn't have an attaché case, a briefcase. No. That's always been the weirdest emoji is this guy with the briefcase just floating away.
And it goes back to the history in Japan of the...
No, that one is from Webdings.
Webdings because they wanted to match Webdings.
There's a whole
story
about
where
it came from in Webdings. I don't remember if it was Magritte. There was a painting or something.
It's based on this logo from Two Tone Records. And it's a floating man.
So here's the big question, which is, can emoji die?
What?
Can we kill ones that we don't like? Can I get rid of the no bicycle sign emoji? Or are we stuck with it forever?
I mean, a year or two ago, I think it was Apple proposed, can we sort of have two tiers? Like a recommended tier and a not recommended tier?
Because they don't want to do illustrations for everyone.
And or you might want to simplify your picker, right? And take out the mountain
tramway.
That's
a big problem on Apple, actually. Yeah. I mean, now we have screen after screen of emojis.
I mean, they could do that without Unicode. Unicode sort of was like, where are we going to draw the line? Like, you get rid of the bottom 10, sure.
Yeah, but Apple doesn't want to take the heat for dropping that one emoji that one person really loves.
Samsung, though, do some weird... I mean, Samsung have dropped... You know the two cross Japanese flags?
Yeah.
They drop that in and out of builds in different countries. Some countries get that. So they've got sort of anti-Japanese sentiments.
Well, this goes to the case of emoji fragmentation, which we've talked about before, which is that one of the problems with emoji is if they're not represented the same way across platforms, you can have total breakdowns where one person thinks they're saying one thing.
Samsung's notorious for that.
And the recipient's like, what are you talking about?
Well, this was a big deal with the gun. Remember, Apple changed the gun to a water pistol. And people said, well, that's not going to be good because what if you send a message with the water pistol? Come to the park and bring your...
Water pistol's
gun. That it was a water pistol on iOS, but it was a real gun on Android. That would not be
look
so
at this.
Good.
This on Samsung. I've got the cookie. The cookie looks like a saltine cracker on Samsung's. This is Cookie Monster.
Is that cultural?
Well, everyone else does a cookie, but... Cookie Monster, very excited about World Chocolate Day, saying, hey, everyone, it's World Chocolate Day. Here's my favorite emoji.
But if you're on a Galaxy S8, you've got a bunch of saltines.
Everyone sees this, but on Samsung, they've got a bit of that. So that's problematic. They've got all these weird ones. And Facebook, obviously, we saw before, they do their own set.
It's a communications medium. You'd want it to be useful.
It really
for
is. This is from Facebook. 60 million emojis sent on Facebook every day. 60 million, 5 billion sent on Messenger every single day.
So everybody's got their own emoji. Is there any hope that one day you are on a subcommittee of a consortium? Could all of these groups get together and say, look, we'll give you some money, hire a designer, make some emoji that all of us will agree to use, right? Standard graphics, not just a standard.
Standard graphics. I mean, where's the incentive, right? Like, if you're Apple, do you want to share your iconic images? And if you're... Maybe the other platforms might want to, but I don't think...
I like Apple's images. Yeah. Apple's the best,
well,
in my opinion.
If you're Apple, you probably don't care, because at this point, I think most people perceive the emoji in terms of Apple style, and a lot of other styles are evolving to match Apple. It's rare that I see something that's totally... different, and Google is going that direction.
So
that's what Google's done,
You're on your way up to the meeting, which is going to be where, in Seattle this year?
Seattle, Microsoft is hosting.
So you must have prepared. What emojis are you going to be looking at? What are some of the requests for this new emoji crop?
So a lot of the stuff that's coming out, I was looking at Emojipedia. We compile a list of what people request.
You're from Emojipedia, which is...
So we have our own set that we'll put together. There's what's called Italian kissy face chef. Like, mwah, beautiful.
Oh, that's good.
So people like that.
I like that. I would go for
there's
that.
There's also
don't start doing Italian hand gestures, because is going to be a real problem.
They're always very popular.
Well, it could,
and the fragmentation, you could have a horrible
Brazil,
misunderstanding.
It means completely different. Yeah.
So they're some of the ones that people want that they kind of request of us. Flags are tricky. We're always getting requests for different flags that,
there's only 220 nations. Just put all the flags in.
The English and Scottish flags should be coming in this
year,
fall,
and Welsh flag, right? Because they're sort of
technically the subdivision.
They're a subdivision, but then you got U.S. states are technically now could be on the list.
Right, you could have a California flag.
Redheads.
I've put in a proposal for
redheads.
So we spent 2 years talking about redheads.
Can't that be a modifier?
Well, that's the thing. We had this proposal last year talking about hair color modifiers, but I guess there was some pushback. Like, do you want to apply a hair tone to everything? Do you want to have every emoji have five hair tones?
Because
at
some point, if you're the art director who has been hired by Apple to do all that, you are looking at thousands of pieces of art that then also need to be stored.
Oh, I like the bubble pipe. Is that what that is?
So these are some of the most popular ones requested from Emojipedia
users. It's called Party Face.
Party Face. That's the kissy chef face there.
I kind of like that, although I think at that size, it's kind of hard to figure out what the hell is
going on. It's a bit complicated. I think it's fun, but the heart hand, people love hearts. Like, it doesn't matter how many hearts we have, people always want a different way to do a heart.
But how would you do a heart hand emoji? Would you?
Well, you could do that.
Just draw hands.
Draw hands making a heart.
Making a heart.
That would be popular. That you're never going to get. That means different things in different countries.
Well, that's the fun, though, right?
You can use it in your own way. So does thumbs up, by the way.
Yeah,
true. Yeah, but if you just show the hand gesture, I mean, that's the beauty of it, right? Is you show the hand gesture and it means whatever you want it to mean.
You can use it in your country as this or as that. So
I guess that's true.
I was hoping the emoji movie would get a bit into some of like the weird. I was hoping they'd have like a Samsung.
So we haven't seen it. Tell us what that is.
I mean, everyone keeps asking me, like, what do you think of the emoji movie? Yeah. Obviously, it's got pretty bad reviews. I didn't think the issue was. Making an emoji movie, I think, could have been very good. Like, yeah. I don't think there's any reason.
Of course you think that.
No, but I mean, conceptually, the Lego movie was good. There's no reason why it can't be funny. And the first 5 minutes were entertaining.
Patrick Stewart is the poop emoji.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The emojis, and they were in the town.
His agent probably held out for that, right? He said, I'm not going to be the smiley emoji. I want to be the poop emoji.
I met Patrick Stewart. He seemed really nice. He seemed to be genuinely, maybe he's just good at acting, but he seemed to be happy to be in there. There he is there.
That's kind of cool. All right, well, show us some more emoji. Lobster is one that you're...
Yeah, what do we got? So you got lobster coming up this year. So you got a whole bunch.
So that's approved already.
No. That's coming up for discussion this week. So
the way the cycle works is sort of this fall we'll see OS updates, final ones from the major vendors, from Apple's. iOS 11 will have ones that were already approved.
That's a shrimp.
And then this will be for next.
This is
sort of like
a crab,
2018 new emoji.
Is it just going to be the exoskeleton?
Well, you know what? There's a bunch of science ones that are on the candidate list now. Test tube. Planets got bumped last time. Every planet was proposed, but that didn't make the count.
Oh, and then there's a whole Pluto argument that happens.
Pluto,
right?
The proposal, I think, said something like all the planets and Pluto. you know what? So the vendors also said this year that they don't have enough time to change the Unicode schedule because of the emoji setup. That they've used to release Unicode releases in June. Now it's moving back to March because vendors said, look, we release at the end of the year. And it's not enough time.
We need more time to build all of these.
And 2 or 3 years ago, it took a whole extra year because they'd release in June, and then we go, we're not ready. iOS comes out in September.
Well, and people can write off emoji and say that they're frivolous, but I think it's a fact, and I think you would agree with me, that it actually is a motivator for people to upgrade their operating systems.
Absolutely.
To get the new emoji. So it's great for the platform vendors to say, if you want that lobster, you need to update to iOS 12 or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
What's
here's a coin emoji being proposed.
That's dopey.
they need heads and tails.
There's already a baseball. We don't need a softball.
Softball gets a very gendered issue. Obviously, a lot of women play softball and not baseball, so they feel very passionately that that it's like a men's sport being shown, not a women's sport.
Is there a difference in how men and women use emojis?
Yeah, absolutely. The women use all the emotive ones more, the tears, the hearts. I don't know, maybe women are just...
And guys are using the guy with the briefcase floating
away.
Most
of the stats I see, the guys are using objects. It's not a huge difference. We're talking like 10-15% here.
Yeah.
But, that's a big thing. And well, to your point, Jason, about the updating your system to get the new emojis, Android have obviously had this issue over time that 90% of Android users are not on the list.
Yeah, if you're using KitKat, you don't have the latest emojis.
Right. And most of them don't have access to it. They get blocked, as you know. So what they've done is they're decoupling the emoji out of Android into making it a library that app developers can include.
Updatable library.
They can't do it by themselves, but hypothetically, Instagram is a big example of an app on Android that doesn't do its own emoji thing, and therefore 90% of Android users can't see the latest emojis.
Or a third-party keyboard, maybe SwiftKey or somebody could...
I guess it's tricky to embed it in the font in the app. So what they're doing is they're making it. So they're making it a free library with Android O this year that any app developer can embed this library. It's called Emoji Compat.
Where does the emoji live? Does it live in the font?
Yeah, it's a font. It's literally a font.
So it's part of the typeface.
Yeah.
And
it's a single, its own typeface.
Yeah,
it's a
font on Apple called Apple.
But
Color
if I use
emoji.
San Francisco on my iPhone, right? That's the font on the
iPhone. But the emoji will come from the emoji font.
There's a separate emoji font.
Right.
Even though there really could all be one font, right? It's all Unicode.
I mean, I guess it'd be a huge font, though. The emoji font on iOS is about 100 meg, which, I know, it doesn't seem that big, but in this case, like, that's loaded in RAM. That's in memory. So
is it the same on Android? The font is a separate typeface.
Yep. It's called Noto Emoji. It's part of their... They've got an open source set on Android. Samsung have their own fork of Google's one. Which, again, every now and then you see a Google-branded one fall through on Samsung where they haven't compiled it correctly or something.
And then Twitter and Facebook are building their own images behind the scenes.
They're just doing their own thing. I guess they've given up maybe on Android compatibility, or maybe they just want a holistic...
That's interesting. So if I see an emoji on Twitter, that's not coming from Noto Emoji. That's Twitter, the app displaying it somehow?
On the computer it is, but they don't do it on mobile. So it's very confusing. Yeah. I don't know why they didn't commit.
What a mess.
On Twitter.com, you'll right. see it, yeah. but you won't necessarily see it.
Just today I had
app.
Someone just say, like, why are we seeing the eagle looks with spread out arms on my phone, and on the computer it's got a head, because on the computer it's using Twitter.
So these are things that are bitterly fought when you get up here to Seattle. Are you going up there with something, this shall not stand, this emoji over my dead body?
You know what? I'm fully in favor, because I don't have a platform. I'm all for more emojis. Whenever anyone says like this or that, I'm like, I'm on board. If it's not rubbish, I want it to happen.
Plus, if it's weird looking, people will go to Emojipedia
yeah, yeah, yeah.
and figure
I'm
out what the hell
for
it is.
It's yeah. not. So I'm in the camp of
you.
More is better, and vendors are smart. They can figure it out. But redheads are definitely there. So much I get so much grief from redheads everywhere I go. So I really want to get
they
that
feel
across
that
the line.
Left out. Huh?
Yeah. See, a person with red hair, it's. You
we
know,
need we need more gray hair emojis.
Yeah, Jason and I are yeah. really
you know
upset.
What? On the list, this is
of course is there's an emoji.
There is no gray hair.
Of course
hair
there is. No. We, it's on the list. I don't know. I'll see
that
if
isn't
I can get
the wizened old man
we're going
emoji.
To be,
it'll
it's be, going to be.
I'll have a cane.
Look.
Yeah, that's right.
I'll have a hump.
Here it
oh,
is.
Oh, that
let
one.
Let me bring it up. Let me bring it up. It's not that one. That's very rude. That is very rude.
That's insane.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Okay.
So
yeah.
we could have included you. This is a proposal from me and the Emoji Subcommittee, but we put
Anderson Cooper
as a reference.
That's a great example.
The Jason Snell, though. Could
yeah, sure. Jason that's
Snell.
Fine. I'll use that emoji for
well,
now.
Leah Laporte.
Gets
what are we doing? So
who's Ty Poppy? That Poppy.
That Poppy. She's very popular. Okay. I have to thank Tiffany Ahmed for showing me who this is, because I had no idea, but she's incredibly
a young person.
I said,
who
has white hair that is female that we could use it as an example? And she went, Poppy, of course.
Poppy?
And
obviously, Jeremy.
So, nonetheless,
yep.
these are candidates for this year, so they could be on phones.
What do you
next
want?
Year.
What, Jason, there's what emoji do you want? An Apple Watch emoji? You should have a six color.
I think Apple's emoji. Watch emoji is an Apple Watch.
It is, yeah.
And Apple's phone emoji is an iPhone,
yeah.
visibly,
yeah,
for,
you're
that,
right.
for that reason.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
And people say, like, oh, I didn't think you're allowed brands. I didn't think you're allowed, like, a Coke emoji, but on your own platform, you can do whatever you
Apple
want.
Yeah, exactly right.
Wants, you,
right.
You could do that.
Is there a demand for a variety of poop emojis, or are we pretty much settled that that's
you know
the
what?
One
what?
And only?
I have seen a bit of demand for a unhappy poo, like a sad
poo.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Mr. Poo emoji is very happy.
He's happy. So I've seen a bit of that. Some people, I've seen
oh
rainbow poo be proposed before. Rainbow colors.
Rainbow.
So
yeah, he is suspiciously happy. Like,
yeah.
wipe
Samsung.
That smile off your face, mister.
Samsung is not, and then this...
HTC is just like it's soft serve ice cream at that
soft,
point.
Come on, that's not.
Yeah. If you click on the Android emoji, you'll see the history. They've got some flies. Click on the actual image of the actual poo next to Google there. Yeah, go up. Click on the next to, on the poo for Google. There you go. Click there. And you scroll down a little, you'll see.
Has
there,
changed.
There
oh,
yes.
Yeah, no. I don't like the flies in the
flies.
Flies. I'm against that one.
Android
and stink. It's got stink lines on it.
Yeah,
too.
I don't like
Man.
That. Don't
some
like
of the Japanese ones had that. Some of them were smiley, some weren't. And Apple
it's
went to smiles.
Graphic.
And I don't know. The smiles are fun, right? Who doesn't want that?
Everybody's got an opinion. You got to love it. It is one of those areas that everybody has an opinion about.
Yeah, they do. So that's what we hear nonstop. So we got that. And as I say, that's
Jeremy
Burge.
He founded Emojipedia, and now he's on, this is like a rags to riches story. He's on the
you made it, man.
Unicode
I'm on the
emoji subcommittee. He's like,
doesn't get any better than this.
And really, seriously, if you've ever wondered about any particular emoji and like why, what the heck, go
awesome.
To Emojipedia.
I want
it's
a
got
Groot
all the,
emoji.
All the details.
You got Groot over here. I think Groot
branded emojis. Twitter does branding of emojis when movies launch and things. They do like custom emojis based on hashtags, which is cheating.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, it's a branding thing, right? Calling
but
it an
actually,
emoji when it's not. But, you know.
That came up during the election because the Trump campaign wanted emojis from Twitter for Hillary Clinton and drain the swamp. Mm. They wanted some standard emojis for that. And Twitter, rightly, I think, said no.
It's a hard line there, right? Once
and that's why, supposedly, why Jack Dorsey was never invited to any of the tech summits at the White House.
So sad for him.
What a loss. Thank you, Jeremy. What a pleasure meeting you. Where are you from? You're from Australia?
From Australia. I mean, living in London for a few years, though.
Oh,
so,
you got a little bit
it's a bit hard to pin me down.
London mixed in there. You came all the way from London to do the...
I speak emoji.
Yeah. Man lives for emoji. Emojipedia.com. If you ever see an emoji and you go, what the heck is that? They
that's
explain
us.
It all.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
The history, the context. We got a number of happy
emojis.
Oh,
there it is. Where do these live?
This is from Throwboy.
Oh, yeah.
We have a poop emoji, pillows. Don't we?
Where's the poo?
It's Sarah. Who, Sarah Lane took my poo emoji.
That's a going away present.
Yeah. I probably said, take any emoji.
What I'll be interested to see, actually, is do the emoji movie versions of these things become iconic, or is this the end?
Is
it buried now, or is that, like, because
maybe
they have their own version
that,
of the poo,
yeah,
and they have their own version of the geyser legs, and that could become, if they have a better sequel, then maybe that could become a thing.
Well, it was the number one movie of the weekend. It beat Dunkirk. It beat Atomic Blonde. It was the number one movie of the weekend.
I like the irony that Atomic Blonde, to promote the movie, they bought an emoji on Twitter.
Oh, really?
It's like you got to fight emoji with emoji, right?
Yeah. What was it? Do you know what it was?
It was, I think it was like a blonde spy, because that's what the movie's
with
about.
With a mushroom cloud coming out of it.
Could be.
Head.
It's possible.
That would do it. All right, we're going to take a break coming up. We're going to get small. We're going to show you how to do macro photography with an editor from DP Review. But first, Megan Maroney with some tips to keep your Twitter experience a little more fun.
Twitter can be an odoriferous swamp of racism, sexism, and other small-mindedness, or it can be a playground full of tech tips, political musings, and cute dog photos. I like to believe it's the latter, but I have a few tips for you for increasing your success in the Twitterverse. First, have you unearthed an old diary, a journal full of your high school poetry or letters you wrote to someone in college? You know how embarrassing some of these words you wrote might be. But if we've learned anything recently from the news, this is way worse when we're talking about old tweets. Now, I don't love it when public figures delete tweets, but it's a personal choice. And if you are a public figure, someone has probably saved them somewhere anyway. If you're not a public figure, you can manually delete old tweets and maybe get rid of them for good using a website like tweetdelete.net. Just sign in, choose a timeline, or delete all your tweets. Tweet Delete will also let you download all your tweets. Both services are free. Two, let's say Twitter is your social network of choice, but every once in a while, 140 characters isn't enough. You write the perfect tweet storm, and then you decide you'd like to share it on your blog or with people who aren't on Twitter. Spooler is a new tool that turns tweet storms into blog posts. I personally don't tweet storm, but I often want to share other people's tweet storms, and Spooler lets you do that too. And finally, if you want to keep up with Twitter while you're washing dishes, folding laundry, or sitting on the couch and too lazy to walk across the room to your phone or computer, try the Twitter Reader skill on your Amazon Echo. Just say, Echo, enable the Twitter Reader skill.
Welcome to Twitter Reader. I can tell you what is happening, can read your latest mentions, the last tweets you liked or were posted by you. Now, how can I help you?
Read my mentions.
Looking for tweets that mention you. Tweet number one by Albert Sims, watching Tech News Today 1818, with Megan Marone and Jason Howell. Tweet number two by Twit Live, Tech News Today show is coming your way with Megan Marone and Jason Howell on Twit.
Echo. Simon says Megan Maroney.
Megan Marone.
Echo. Simon says Megan Maroney.
Megan Marone.
I am Megan Marone, and I host Tech News Today every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific with Jason Howell. And I also host iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, right here on the Twit Network.
Who's more likely to fix her name pronunciation, Megan or Echo? I think Megan better change her name.
It could be.
Although you said Andy Inoko got Siri?
Yeah, or got Apple's text-to-speech. Yeah, he wrote a column in Macworld about them getting his name wrong, and it mysteriously got right after that.
Well, they've always said my name
that
right.
That is power.
Boss of the universe. Mm-hmm. So we brought some wonderful, beautiful little bugs and butterfly wings and little bugs riding bicycles. These all come from Kevin Clark. He is at bugunderglass.com. We just love these. But I had a little problem because I wanted to get a picture. I thought, oh, this would be such a great picture of this bug. But I can't focus.
Yeah. Too close.
Too close. Who could solve this? Oh, maybe DP Review. Barney Britton is on the line. He's an editor with dpreview.com. Hi, Barney.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Are you a macro? Do you like macro photography?
It's not, I don't do a lot of it, but I did. I recently went on a shoot with an expert macro photographer, which was pretty fascinating, and I enjoyed that a lot.
You see, I mean, real macro photographers are not doing pictures of bugs under glass. They're doing pictures of bugs in real life or flowers. First of all, what defines macro photography?
Yeah, you're cheating a bit with them being dead. It does make life a little bit easier.
A lot easier.
Macro photography technically means reproducing something very small, quite close up, at a reproduction ratio of 1:1 or greater, which means life size or greater. That's a distinction that really pedants care about more than most, you know, normal photographers. Normally, when we say macro photography, we just mean close up pictures of small things.
So, but the problem is, with a regular camera and lens, you probably can't focus that close.
That's right. Yeah, most normal large format cameras, by which I mean larger than a compact point and shoot or a phone, won't let you get particularly close. You'll need specialized macro lenses, which are often a bit more costly.
So that's the first thing: is you need a special lens. Yeah, my phone, I can focus pretty close with an iPhone.
Yeah, you can get there, but you can't get beyond a certain point. It gives up. It tries and tries. Yeah. And you can't do it.
And you'll get distortion issues as well on the wide-angle lenses of phones.
So one of the nice things, if you have a smartphone, is there are plenty of people. You have one, Jason.
I do.
Is that an all clip?
This is Photo JoJo.
Photo JoJo.
Where you've got a little magnet sticker on the back of your thing, and you pop on a little magnetic.
And it just goes right on the iPhone
along with it.
And this one I just got. It's from Aukey, A-U-K-E-Y. Although I was trying to get a Moment. Somebody told me the Moments are the best iPhone lenses. But this is nice because it's just like got a little pincher clip, like a hair clip. You have to turn on the camera and position it so that you can get it in there without seeing the lens itself. But that doesn't take too long. And once you do, these special lenses. What do they do technically, Barney? They're just changing the focal length of the...
It's basically just a magnifying glass.
Oh.
I mean, the lens, your lens already has a very close focusing capability.
Right.
But as I said, the issue is you're going to have wide-angle distortion. So, you know, if you're trying to take a picture of anything close up, a person is a good example, the nose will be enormous, the ears will be tiny, because it's quite a wide-angle lens.
Right.
So by clipping one of these things on, effectively, it's just a magnifying glass.
And this is kind of, for the casual person, here's a close-up of a bug riding a tricycle. It's kind of fun, but I noticed a couple of things. For one thing, the depth of field is very shallow. Like, the bug is in focus, but the wheels are a little bit out of focus. And lighting could also be an issue. We are here in a studio where we have lights from a lot of different angles. So help us get better macro photography pictures. I have a point-and-shoot here. This is the Lumix LX10 from Panasonic, and like a lot of point-and-shoots, it has a macro setting. You could tell it's a macro because it's a picture of a flower in the setting. So assuming you have the capability with either an add-on lens or perhaps a macro point-and-shoot, how can we make this look a little bit better?
Well, lighting helps a lot. I mean, if you're using a compact camera like that, you're limited to just piling ambient light into the scene.
Well, and you see how my shadow is often in these pictures because I'm so close, right?
Yeah, the shadow of the lens will be a problem as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing, don't feel you have to go to the absolute minimum focusing distance, because if you've got a shadow of your lens in the image, you can't take that out.
Right.
You're much better off zooming out a little bit and just using all the pixels. Most cameras now have 16 megapixels or greater.
Oh, so I can crop it.
Much greater.
Just crop it later.
Yeah. It's, you're still going to get a great image. And it means you don't have to go, you don't have to be bumping into the insect or the flower to get the shot. But yeah, if you don't, the compact flashes on those little compact cameras aren't going to be good enough to really light up that insect, because again, you'll get the shadow of the lens. So really just, you know, turn the lights up. But if you have the option of using external flash guns, that's when you can get much more creative. But it's harder to do on a compact camera.
So a lot of photographers who are even only semi-serious might have one of these. This is an add-on speed light for a DSLR. So it has the little mount thing. But you don't have to use it on the DSLR. You could turn it on. Do you suggest putting this off to the side maybe?
Yeah, so if you're using a DSLR, the best setup, the most versatile setup, in my opinion, would be one flash on the camera to act as a trigger, and then two or three smaller flashes off to the sides to act as what we call slave flashes, which basically will fire on command. That doesn't need to mean you have to spend a lot of money, because the slave flashes, most manufacturers offer a very small flash in their lineup, and they're typically not that expensive.
There's yeah, that's well, he's got, so Gus got a Joby Gorilla Pod. He's got a diffuser. And he's got a lot of different.
Yeah, he's got all kinds of things. This is Thomas Shahan. He's the guy that I shot with recently over in Idaho, and this is his homemade partly setup. And these are he uses Odds and Ends as a weird Chinese manufacturers make some of it. So he makes some of it himself, and he goes to thrift stores to find the rest. You have to know what you're doing to make a setup like this, but I mean, it's probably, not including the camera, it's probably less than $200 in total. So you don't need to spend a lot of money. And Thomas's website and Flickrstream would be a great place to start, actually, for some inspiration. He's very good.
And of course, your article, 10 Tips for Successful Macro Photography at dpreview.com. Look at these images. Now, there is something else going on. Because he's got a self-contained unit, when you're taking a picture of a spider, you don't have an hour to set up a tripod and lights and everything. The spider is going to be long gone. So his setup, it looks like, is pretty much mostly self-contained. He can go to the spider and get a shot pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's handheld. I mean, if you're shooting macro, if you're shooting, as you are in the studio today, if you're shooting dead insects, a tripod is a lot easier. A tripod will let you get the shot that you need. Right. But if you're out in the wild, and you know, I'd recommend anyone who wants to try it, just go out into your backyard. Handheld, working handheld is much, much more versatile because then, you know, you're much more flexible in terms of your focusing and your framing and just moving from one shot to the next.
It is challenging, though, because a lot of times when you're shooting macro, you're shooting wide open. Focus is a real challenge. That's why a lot of macro photographers prefer tripods.
That's right, but you shouldn't really, and if you are shooting macro, you shouldn't really be focusing wide open because then you're just setting yourself up for failure.
Yes.
And the depth of field is so shallow that that you really do need to stop your lens down a little bit and give yourself extra. And this is, I'm getting a little bit technical here, but...
That's good. F8, F11...
F11, F16 even, because although things might get a little bit softer at F16, you'll still get a much more, especially if it's a small insect that you're shooting, you'll get much more of it in focus. And then, of course, although that cuts a lot of light out, for one thing, you're hopefully outdoors, and also if you've got those flashes on board, you can balance all that out. So you're much, much more versatile if you work in that way.
So Jason, you're getting some good shots of these dead bugs.
Yeah, I'm getting some shots of you too, but
get right up close to my nose
bugs.
Here.
Yeah,
we got to thank Kevin Clark again from BugsUnderGlass.com for these. But you're right; as soon as I get the camera in there, I'm getting shadow.
Yeah.
So lighting is really a big deal on this.
Yeah, and then the macro mode on a lot of compact cameras is it's sort of marketing speak in a way, really. The minimum focusing distance, you know, of some of those compact cameras is 1 centimeter or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's just not useful because there's no way you can illuminate a subject, assuming it's reflective, not transmissive. There's no way you can illuminate a subject at that focus distance because the shadow of the camera just gets in the way.
It is fun, though, and I remember when I first got my Olloclip, which was my first attachable lens for my iPhone, I went around taking pictures of everything, sugar cubes, people's pupils, their eyes, and it's really fun because you're seeing a world that is at actual size as if you were really right in there, and that's kind of a neat thing. Of course, lots of fun for insects and flowers and things like that. I think we should all run out and take some macro shots. Look at these beautiful. Look at that iguanas. Just gorgeous.
And it's easy. They're easy to do as well. I mean, one of the reasons why Thomas is so good at what he does is that he knows an awful lot about bugs, insects, and spiders.
Right.
You know, and I think that's really a key to really being successful at this. You just have to know what it is you're actually looking for. But that said, you could just go out on the street and dig around on the, you know, in the grass or in your backyard, or just turn a stone or two over, and you will find things to photograph. The insects are all around us.
Right. Start with somebody saying in the chat room, old watch gears, because they don't run away.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, that's true.
Those are kind of cool too. Yeah.
Old watch gears, old cameras.
Yeah. You're always within 5 feet of a spider, right?
So I don't even want to know.
No. There's a content warning for this episode: spiders,
spiders,
and other bugs.
Trigger warning. Hey, it's great to talk to you. Barney Britton is an editor at dpreview.com. Look for his article with Thomas Shahan, who did all the amazing images. They're so beautiful. 10 expert tips for successful, look at that, macro photography. And I presume these are live, right?
Oh, yeah. Thomas doesn't photograph anything that isn't. I mean, he is an extraordinary expert in bugs, insects, and spiders. He, and you know, he travels all over the world giving workshops. I would strongly recommend, if you're interested, looking at his work, because the passion he brings to the educating people about these animals. You know, there's nothing to be afraid of. It's extremely rare that you'd run into trouble with any insect or spider, certainly in the USA. You know, they're nothing to be afraid of. They're fascinating, and obviously, as you can see, when you get up really close, they're stunningly beautiful as well.
They're quite beautiful. What camera does he use? What lens does he use for these?
Well, he actually, this is what I mentioned earlier on, the thrift store purchases. You know, his main setup that he uses day to day is based around a secondhand Pentax DSLR, nothing special, few years old. And then old manual lenses that he found in thrift stores on reversing rings. And so if you take an old 50mm lens and you just literally flip it around and attach it to the camera via its filter ring, you greatly increase its magnification capability. The problem is it's very hard to see what you're doing through the viewfinder of the camera. So guesswork and focus bracketing definitely comes into play.
Yeah.
But if you know what you're looking for and you have a lot of patience, you can get extraordinary images. I mean, as I said, almost all of the pictures you're looking at now, the gear that Thomas used to take them probably cost less than $200 in total.
Amazing. And yet these are art quality images. Just, mm-hmm. just
and you can go and buy a multi-$1,000 macro lens and you'll get fantastic results, and they're very easy to use. But you don't have to spend that kind of money. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Barney Britton, dpreview.com.
Thank you.
Real pleasure. Now we have all these bugs to take pictures of, too. Mm-hmm. Thanks once again to bugunderglass.com for some of these. Now, are these real, Jerry, or are they?
They're real bugs.
They're real bugs. But they are dead, right?
They are dead.
Okay, good. Yeah, these are really quite beautiful. Isn't that amazing? All right, Jason, a call for help is next in just a second. Yes. Jason, get your thinking cap on. We've mm-hmm. got probably the question Mac experts least want to hear.
Yes,
issues indeed. With iCloud coming up. I'm glad you're here to answer that. But first, some custom commands for your Google Home and Google Assistant. Jason Howell will show us.
So, you picked up one of those handy Google Homes to bring a little assistance to your everyday life. Wouldn't you know it, there's a ton of services that have connected themselves into Google Home by way of Google Assistant. And it's very likely that one thing you've always wanted your smart home to do is supported officially. But you can always fill in the gaps in creative ways if it's not, or even if you just want to customize your interactions to do things that you want. You can supercharge your Google Home to answer to whatever voice command you like, and the magic resides in a service called If This Then That, or IFTTT. You'll first need to create an account with If This Then That if you don't have one already. Once you've done that, make sure that you're signed in, of course. Now you'll want to search for Google Assistant within IFTTT. And connect your Google account to it. That is the same Google account that your Google Home is connected to. Now you'll want to create a new applet in If This Then That, which can be found in the dropdown in the top right of the screen next to your profile picture. If This Then That follows an easy formula. So let's first tell it what this is by tapping the plus this, and we'll do a search for Google Assistant as the service that we're looking for. And now we have some options to narrow down what this is. In this case, let's go with saying a simple phrase. Now I have up to three different spaces with which to fill in variations on what my actual voice action is going to be. Under what do you want to say, I'm going to go ahead and put in there, it's time to chill. I can also have Assistant say something in response to my voice command, like sit back, relax, and kick your feet up. I'll put that in there. And now we have the trigger, the this in our formula. Now let's tap the plus that button to set the action that happens as a result. In my case, I'm going to search for the Hue light bulbs, and I can select to change the color. I'm going to go ahead and set it so my living room lights turn blue. And now, anytime that I say the magic words, my lights will turn dark blue. Hey, Google. It's time to chill.
Sit back, relax, and kick your feet up.
Chill.
I had Hue lights. I took them out. I don't know. Do you have those? Do you do that?
I do, but I don't use the weird color settings anymore. I actually bought a bunch of smart switches with regular lights.
I like to say turn the lights on or turn off the lights in the kitchen, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I'd rather have my bulb be dumb and my Switches be smart if I can.
I'm kind of with you on that one. It's like one of the many things in this tech world. You install them and then it's like, big deal, right?
That's why we're here, is to buy this stuff and
so you try don't have to.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's do a call for help. To Nashville, Tennessee, we go. Dan is on the line. I guess Jason tells me you. There he is.
Oh, listener Dan. He's wearing an incomparable T-shirt. Well done,
listener Dan. Jason was saying you're a fan. I didn't realize. Well, there we go. Look at that.
But he's going to ask me a hard question. Is the problem?
Curse you, listener Dan.
It is. Even Serenity's iCloud guide couldn't help me.
Oh no,
we're doomed.
We've got an Apple ID quandary. My wife and I have been sharing an old Apple ID of mine for many years, purchases from iTunes and now the App Store and even iTunes Match. And since then, my wife and I both have separate additional iCloud accounts so we can keep our contacts and our calendars and all that separate. And now our daughter is almost 6 years old, and we'd kind of like her to have her own account, because we're tired of our devices all lighting up when grandma and grandpa want to FaceTime. So I have seen family sharing and even some of the stuff coming up in the fall, and I really want to do it, but I want to do it once, and I want to do it the right way and not mess anything up. So I thought about making the old shared store account the head of the household and then putting us all under it, but I just wanted to ask the experts before I went and did that and then couldn't undo it.
Well, is there a right way, Dan? Is there a right way? That's the first question.
Is there any way?
I use a family account now myself. And so my wife is on that, and my son and daughter both have their IDs.
Does she have her own ID?
She has her own ID.
So everybody has their own ID,
yes.
Which you definitely want. I remember for a while before family sharing, my son used my iCloud account, and then I started getting texts to him, and he started getting my texts, and we realized this is not a good idea.
There was a time when Apple made it easier to do this, where you could be logged into the App Store with a different account than you were everywhere else.
I still do. I have an iCloud account and an App Store.
But they are making it harder and harder to keep those things separate. We tried that for a while, and then I wanted to do Find My Friends to see where my wife was, and you can't do it because she's logged into my account. So it thinks I'm
also
her, too. It's
but also problematic if you bought music in the old days of copy protection, or you bought TV, and it's going to be associated with that account, right?
Right. So there's some sharing. That one of the things about this iTunes family program is that there's some sharing of data across plants, which is great. Not all of it is there, but a lot of it is there.
So movies, TV,
right? But not
books.
But not your iCloud photos. The storage will be shared in the fall, but not your photo library.
Okay. So you'll buy a pool of 100 gigabytes. Everybody gets a piece
starting
of that.
Starting this fall, you'll be able to do
that. But you can't see their stuff. Right. They can't see your
stuff. And that's great, because right now I've got 2 terabytes, and my wife is still having to pay for extra storage to back up her iPhone.
But the
because
key
she
here
can't
is,
share mine. But she will
still, she has her account.
Yes.
You have your account. Your kid will have her account. And that's the main starting point.
So I
and you have to designate one account as a master for family sharing, right? That person, probably listener Dan, right, will be the one that then says, and please invite my wife and my child to the family sharing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it could be, in the case of having this other extraneous account that you've got, I think, and tell me if you've heard that you can't do this, you should be able to make that your master to designate you and your wife and your individual accounts as members, full members of the family.
But your master should be the one that owns the music, the movies.
Owns the most stuff, the stuff you've been buying most of your stuff.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, but so let's say you're my master.
Yes.
I'm your family.
Okay.
And I buy something. You can't see what I bought, or can you?
No, I can. It's all shared, and you can share. If my wife buys,
so then it wouldn't matter, because whoever owns it, it's visible to everybody.
It mostly doesn't matter. So if my wife buys an app, I can get it, and it shows up. I can actually go into my purchases and also see her app purchases.
I like that. So there's not one dominant account. Everybody's kind of sharing
And with
everything.
A kid, you can lock them out and say, you don't get to buy things unless I approve it, which we do for my son, which
Absolutely.
Is great.
Absolutely, yep.
The big challenge, so Dan, I think you should be able to do that. The problem is mostly in-app purchases, because in-app purchases do not transfer across, which
Now, sometimes they do, though, because on Plants vs. Zombies, my wife bought a lot of characters, and I could restore purchases. Yeah, maybe we're on the same account.
Yeah, see, this is the thing. It may be that they let you do it across accounts, although
is that up to the game?
I think a lot of app developers don't support that, and that includes for, like, permanent, inexhaustible in-app purchases. What they don't want is for you to buy, like, resources in a game and then transfer it to somebody
else. See, that's very confusing.
But to unlock an app,
we both play Words with Friends, and she has different capabilities than I do. But then we also both play Plants vs. Zombies, and I can get her special characters.
Yeah, that may be because you're logging into the developer's account and it's syncing. So I guess that's my...
Oh, that's right. That's
right?
What it is.
Right? So
that has nothing to do with iCloud.
Exactly.
That's the Plants vs. Zombie developer
account. Right, and so they're granting you powers because you're logged in with the same account on their servers. I guess what I'm saying is, I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's a good idea because you want that FaceTime thing to work. But there is something that you got to watch out for, which is this in-app purchase gotcha, where you may end up thinking, like, this just happened. There was some app that I thought was really great, and I bought it with an in-app purchase, unlocked it. And then I was going to suggest that my wife try it out, and I realized she would also have to buy it. Because it was funded by an in-app purchase instead of being a purchase
app. If you're all using the same credit card on all these accounts? Because your kid will certainly be using the same one.
I think you can assign a credit card per account.
Okay.
I think,
but it doesn't matter.
Or you add credit cards to the master account and then designate which credit card gets used. I got a thumbs up in the audience that I think that's what it is. So on my son's account, it says, we're going to use this card.
Right.
And then we could choose another card for our account.
For
but
your account.
The master account adds the cards in.
See, it's not. I don't fully blame Apple. This is just why cloud is difficult.
This is hard stuff, right?
Yeah. I mean, Google has this kind of similar problem with people using Google for business. You know, G Suite accounts as well as regular personal Gmail accounts. Never the twain shall meet. It's just a mess. And we always berate Google for that. So while Apple hasn't done the greatest job with iCloud, I think in this case you can't really blame Apple.
Yeah. I just wish they would be... I mean, we haven't seen a major expansion of these family features since they were introduced 3 years ago.
Yeah.
It would be nice if they kept kind of refining them, and they haven't done a lot. Sharing space is the first major change in 2.5, 3 years.
Right.
So Dan, if you do this, what am I missing? What are you worried about that we haven't talked about?
No, I think you've covered it, and I think you've given me the confidence I need to do it. And I'll let you know how it goes. But and I'm not really worried about the in-app purchase thing. As Jason knows, I'm one of those people who, fortunately, financially speaking, I can, you know, have the money to support the things I like. So I don't necessarily hate the idea of putting some money toward the developers of some great apps.
Yeah, I think that's a good
idea. I've got to buy an in-app purchase a time or two.
Buy it a couple of times just to help them out.
Yeah, sure, across the different things. But yeah, I think, and then you can just leave that sort of master account there, not even logged in on a device, and just
nobody
it
has
exists.
It. It's just the hook.
Yeah, because now everything is sort of chained together. You can't just say, well, I want my daughter's FaceTime to be different. It really doesn't want you to do that anymore. So you should be able to do it.
The real problems on iCloud occur when you want to move stuff from one account to another account, or you want to merge accounts. I'm going to have this problem, it sounds like. I have an account for the App Store that's separate from my iCloud account. And I guess, am I going to have to call Apple and merge them?
It's possible. They can do some of that. There's also appleid.apple.com, which people don't know about, which has a lot of information about your Apple ID. If you go to that website, it's got a lot of information about what devices are logged in.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is tricky. I think so many people have a separate account for the App Store that it may be a while before they completely deprecate that. But every other aspect of the device other than the App Store, they want one Apple ID for it. So that's why married couples especially have been running into this, that you can't really get away with it anymore. You need to use this sharing feature.
And that it makes sense. I mean,
That
was a really bad hack, and I found out when I was seeing Henry's texts on my phone and he was seeing my texts on his phone. You shouldn't share.
Well, hey guys, my wife Michelle, appreciate this. I try to do all the heavy lifting on the home tech support, even though she's very savvy. She likes to not mess with it. She did want me to say hello, Leo. We're viewers from a long time ago in the tech TV days.
Thank you.
In fact, I have a brief. I think this will be an easier follow up question. In 1999, on Call for Help, Jason shared some print preview tips. And I just really wanted to know what the latest and greatest in print preview is on Mac OS.
I think we have
here
video
it is.
Of that. Print preview feature, and here from Macworld Magazine to take me through this.
Look at that hair. I'm both of those
Mr.
guys.
Mr. Preview himself, Jason
Thank
Snell.
Thank you. My new title.
Every week a new title.
I am Mr. Print Preview.
I couldn't resist
Can I be like,
you look so young.
I had kids, preview. And then that was
it. So what is print preview?
Well, what
print
is preview print preview?
Is a little feature in most Mac applications that lets you see website. What you're going to be printing before you print
Intertext.
It.
And why would you want to do that?
Well, usually it's so you don't waste paper.
I think we were growing peppers in the back pages, there. It looks like.
Are there beach balls back there?
Yes. I don't know. I don't know what was going on. That was the worst. That's set. That's not even my set over your right shoulder. That's just somebody else.
Somebody else's some other show. Is that Soledad O'Brien's?
That was the Money Machine with Carmine Gallo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Print preview.
Look at that. Look at that print preview. Look at that Rainbow Apple menu. Man.
Because there are these little.
I just wish we could still get Internet Explorer. One of the best. That's all I'm saying.
There was a time when that was the best there was.
But before, sorry,
Dan, thank you for segueing into that the thing I found in a dusty old tape in my garage. Serious.
I like the time code. That's good.
Yeah, that was when they were very nice and said you were a guest on Tech TV.
Here's
a VHS tape of it.
Yeah, we stopped doing that after a while.
Yeah.
I think that what's great is that a lot of this stuff has surfaced on YouTube.
Yeah, there's literally, when David Letterman retired, I had these VHS tapes I had saved from when he was on when I was like a teenager.
Oh.
And I was going to digitize them. I had a big plan of like, I'm going to put these on the internet. Nobody will have seen them in years. Every single one of them that I searched for, it's already there. It's all on YouTube. Yeah. All of it.
All illegally, but I guess there's no one to complain anymore now that David's got to be.
I think Dave doesn't care.
He doesn't care. Dan, it's very nice to have met you. Thank you for being
on. Thanks a lot,
guys.
I appreciate it.
Come back anytime.
And blame me if it doesn't work.
I'll let you know how it goes.
This is a universal problem. It's the one thing that Mac people just don't want to talk about is iCloud.
It's tough.
And I think Serenity is kind of the guru of this.
Yeah, she has been through the wars on this
one. No kidding. Coming up next week, it's another Jason. Jason Howell and I will be answering questions. Here's how you can ask yours. Hey.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We have more Apple questions coming up in the mailbag, but first, Brian Burnett. He's kind of a speed demon. He's kind of a crazy guy. He likes to ride his motorcycle, and he loves to get video from the axle. He's going to show us the best places to stick your GoPro.
Hey-o.
This is Brian Burnett, host of Know How, and today I'm going to show you how to get the most out of your action cam. So if you're someone who's bought a GoPro or something similar and you want to get some good shots with that, the worst thing you could do is leave it in one place and remain a static shot. That's super boring. Now, what you want to do is move it around. Now, some shots work better than others. The higher up you put an action camera, the less dramatic it's going to seem. So if you put it somewhere lower, it will seem like you're going a lot faster than you are. So if you see in this video where I've put it next to the side of the wheel there, you get the amplified effect of speed because it's closer to the ground. Now, if you only have one camera or maybe just a couple of action cams, be sure to move them around, change the direction, have one facing backwards, have one facing forwards. This applies to motorsports, but you could do it in a lot of different ways. One thing about placing it on a rigid body of something like the side of a car or on the tank of a motorcycle is that a lot of the bumps and things like that are going to be absorbed by the mount, so you're going to get a lot of shakiness and things. One of my favorite mounts that I use is a custom one that I 3D printed, and I attach it to the helmet of my motorcycle. And what that allows is my body works as part of the suspension, so the video looks a lot more smooth. It also has the effect of more of a first person view to it. So it's much more of like putting you into the action of the video, which is kind of the point of a lot of these small, durable cameras. So keep that in mind when you're shooting video. And then once you have footage recorded from a bunch of different views, having moved the camera around, you can cut it together to make it look like you have more than one camera. So a lot of this, these shots that I did here were just one camera, and I moved them around and did the same loop on the street a couple of times and stitched it together to make it look like it was a multicam shoot. So those are a few tips to get the most out of your action cam. This has been Brian Burnett from Know How. Thanks for watching.
Here's another tip. If you're going to put Leo's GoPro on the side of his Tesla, make sure that mount is on there pretty darn good. And if it does fall off, you might not want to drive over it afterwards.
Oh.
These are the pieces they brought me back afterwards. Yeah.
I mean,
actually, it wasn't you who drove over it, right? The truck right behind the Tesla.
The hay truck.
Huh?
A hay truck.
Hay truck. Oh, good.
Yeah.
It's just a hay truck. Oh, wait a minute. Here's the video. Here's
the car. Just another day in Petaluma.
Even the car got shattered. But, you know, I bet you, well, I don't know. Were you able to get anything off the car?
The car got split in half.
The car was split in half. Yeah, that's one dead GoPro. Wow. The things I have done for this network.
For science.
And look, this. Can I touch this?
Yeah.
That's a caterpillar. Or what is that?
Grasshopper?
Grasshopper? That is, that's a locust.
Not a whole lot of legs left.
That is creepy as heck. I don't want to touch it. You don't need a macro to see that. That's big.
No.
Let's get our mailbag for Jason Snell.
Ooh.
Just rolls
it
in.
It rolls on in. That's
and look,
service.
Just for you.
Emoji gummies.
Emoji gummies. Did Jeremy bring these?
I hope he gets a cut
and
of
an
that.
An emoji fidget spinner.
Ah, yeah.
Combining the two worst trends of 2017 in one convenient package.
I hope Jeremy's not listening.
Wow. These are happy yummies, all happy face.
Well, it's a standard, right? So anybody can take advantage of the standard and make emoji.
Make candy
they can
or
make
whatever.
Bad movies. They can make gummy bears.
Not all of them are happy. Some of them are crying.
If you pay a little extra, maybe you get the poop emoji.
That would not sell
chocolate
well.
Chocolate poop emojis.
I think there's... Oops, sorry, grasshopper. What if I popped him in my mouth right now?
Oh, I would not recommend it.
Well, maybe.
Be crunchy.
Maybe. Pick an email, any email. Let's see what you got. You got number one. Go ahead, start.
All right. Number one. Dear Jason and Leo, a friend of mine forgot the password of a local iPhone encrypted backup on Windows 10 in iTunes.
Okay, so just to recap in my mind, you plug in your iPhone via a wire to iTunes. iTunes fires up. You back it up. If you check the box that says encrypted, which you want to, because it will back up all the passwords, it asks for a password to encrypt the encrypted backup. Only you know that.
Yes.
Your friend forgot it.
Yes. So what are her options involving resetting her iPhone, and what is the security rationale? Erasing the local backup should allow to redo the backup and set a new password, shouldn't it? Let me know what you think.
Oh.
And best regards from Germany. Signed, Harold. So, yes, that's the answer. Is the good news is, as long as she has forgotten her password but also still has her phone, then it's not a big deal. You basically would plug it back in.
Back it up again.
I think uncheck the box that says encrypt it. Check it again. Give a new password. Back it up again.
Just to start over fresh.
And it will back it up again with a new password. You won't get... There's no way to reset that password.
You can't get into that old backup.
The old backup, if you don't know the password, you can't get at it. But
Apple doesn't know it.
Apple can't retrieve it. It's just you because it's a local backup. Right. But it shouldn't matter. As long as she's still got her device, you just make a new backup, and then it should be okay. And the rationale is really... Apple doesn't want to store passwords in an unencrypted form because then somebody could look at your hard drive and see all your passwords.
Right.
And so they omit the passwords on an unencrypted backup, but they will keep the passwords if you encrypt
them. I always make encrypted backups, but you do want to remember the password.
Yes.
The only time this would be a problem is if she'd lost that phone or it got damaged and she wanted to buy a new one.
Turns out she forgot her encrypted. And so, again, this isn't an issue if you cloud backup because then you just use your iCloud password.
Right.
But if you want a local backup, that's what you need to do.
I think it's always, we got to turn the fire on. I've been a little chilly.
The fog rolls in. It gets a little cold.
It's really getting too cold in here. My bursitis was acting up. Email. It's hot.
Get some of the gout. Get some of the gout.
Get the gout. Loosen it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can actually flip this switch and it does actually get warm. Email number two. We haven't used that in a while. It's a little stinky.
Woof!
Some dust on that burner. I am a single mother and work very hard, says Heather. Well, Heather,
right on.
I bet you do. You have my sympathy. That's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard with two of us. I'd like to reward myself by purchasing an Apple Watch. Oh, nice. But I can't afford a brand new one. So I've been looking on eBay at a nice slightly used Series 1 watch for $199. What are your thoughts on this older watch? Should I just buy a Series 2 refurb from the Apple Store? Heather. Now, before you even mention this, I just say be very careful with electronics on eBay. There are many fine eBay sellers. We've sold stuff on eBay. Gazelle sells stuff on eBay. But if it's a third party, it's buyer beware. And a lot of times electronics, you may not get what you thought, and you may not have great recourse on eBay. Having said that, let's say it's somebody with a very high rating, very trustworthy.
Right.
But $199, the Apple Watch sold for the sport version, sold for $349. That seems like a lot.
Right. So there are a couple of things to unpack here. One of them is she says it's a Series 1.
Right.
But that may be shorthand for the original Apple Watch.
Oh, and that's not the Series 1?
It's not. Sort of those of us who write about the Apple Watch have started calling the original the Series 0 because they actually upgraded the processor, not the screen, but the processor, when they went from the original to the Series 1. The Series 1 is a little bit better than the original Apple Watch.
What was the time frame on that?
A year and a half okay. in? Yeah.
Oh, so I always thought the Series 1 was really the Series 2, but there was, in fact, a Series 0, Series 1, and a Series 2.
Yeah, when they came out with the Series 2, they also announced that the old Apple Watch would be the Series 1, but it's not actually the old Apple Watch. Oh. It was a little bit better than the original
so
Apple
the Series
Watch.
Series 2 should have been the Series 3.
So when they say it's a Series 1, I have a question. Do they mean the original Apple right. Watch? You can't really use those as shorthand. That all said, that's a great price, and Apple's still selling a Series 1, which means they're all in the ballpark. They're all going to be supported for a while. So you could, and that is a good price.
What
for
would
it.
She lose out on if she bought a Series 1 instead of a Series 2?
Series 2...
It's faster.
Well, I think it's not faster. The screen is brighter. It's a much brighter screen. Okay. And it's got more of... It's waterproof.
It has the little spitting function.
Yeah, exactly yeah. right. It's waterproof, yeah. so it's got swim features in it. Right. Because the other one is water resistant. You can wear it in the shower. But that's the one you go swimming in is the Series 2. But unless you are a swimmer... or you really want that brighter screen, you know, the Series 1 is fine. The original watch is fine. And she mentions refurbs,
the software is the same, right? The operating system
is software is exactly the same.
With the exception of those underwater
Like the swimming
apps.
Features, yeah. The she mentions buying a refurbished model. It's one of these secrets. You have to look on Apple.com and find the link to refurbished products on the Apple homepage, down way down at the bottom. But Apple does sell... items that are generally brought back to the Apple store by somebody who decided they wanted to return it. They didn't like the product. They didn't want it.
So it's not really a used watch.
It's not.
Or it's very, very lightly used.
They were lightly used, and then they get reconditioned by Apple. They get checked out, and they get a full Apple warranty.
That's the big thing.
And this goes for every Apple product. You should look at the refurbs. Sometimes it's the current generation. Sometimes it's one generation back. But you can get a pretty good deal on something that's essentially new because Apple doesn't feel like it's right for them to sell it as 100% new.
It's one of the few times I recommend refurb. If you're getting it from the original manufacturer with a full warranty, usually that means it was just an open box, was returned, and they can't sell it as new. But, of course, at the same time, you're not going to get the same deal. They usually only cut a little bit
right,
off.
Right, but even if it's $40 or $50, it can be worth it.
Yeah.
But I would say, if it's a reputable seller to get the original Apple Watch for $199, that's a pretty good deal.
You think so?
I think that is a pretty good deal, yeah.
Let the buyer beware at eBay, but if you trust them...
And look at the refurb store at Apple, because you may be able to get a good deal there, a very good deal.
I think the bottom line on this is that the older Apple Watches are pretty close functionality-wise.
Yeah, in fact, the older Apple Watches are a little bit... The Series 2 is a little bit thicker because it's got a better battery. I should say that, too. It's got longer battery life than the original does. But, they're pretty good. The brighter screen, waterproof, better battery life, that's about it.
Get yourself the Apple Watch, Heather. You deserve it.
I think that's what we're saying.
That's hard work, being a single mom.
Amen.
Amen to that. I thank you so much, Jason Snell.
Always a pleasure.
Really appreciate it. It's always good to have you on.
It's great to be here.
I have an old GoPro I'd like to sell you for $199.
Well, let's do some refurbishment on that first.
Yeah, I'll refurb it. Wait a minute. Anybody got any tape? And then I'll put it on eBay, and somebody's going to get a great deal. Only $10 off. We thank you so much for watching the show, too. We do the show every Saturday afternoon right after the radio show. That's about 3 p.m. Pacific, give or take a little bit. 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC, Saturday afternoons. Come by next week. Jason Howell will be here. Always have some interesting people helping on the show, like the great Jason Snell. You can catch his work at sixcolors.com. Yeah. And the podcasts are at theincomparable.com.
That's it.
And anything else you want to plug?
I do some tech podcasts on Relay FM, too. Yep. So Relay.fm.
Fantastic. If you want to be in the studio, we had a wonderful studio audience from all over the world. It was really fun to have you guys here. Mm-hmm. Easy to do that. Just email tickets at twit.tv. But do that, because that way you'll know if I'm here. We'll make sure we have a seat out for you. We'll give you directions to our secret location, all of that. Tickets at twit.tv. If you want the show, you can find it at twit.tv or on YouTube or wherever you subscribe. Do subscribe. That way you'll get it every week. And don't forget, speaking of subscriptions, we've got a newsletter that lets you know what's coming up in the week ahead for Twit. And you can find that at twit.tv/newsletter. Twit.tv
/newsletter. Great new Gibson gear in the store by popular demand. Steve did not want his head on the T-shirt or the mug, but I love it. Look at him. He's so smug. He's so happy. You're going to feel so safe with your Security Now mug. That and all the other Twit merch is available at twit.tv/store. We sell through Teespring, so it's good quality stuff, and they stand behind their stuff. And we have all these neat designs and stuff. But we just added the Security Now things. And I just you can get it without Steve's head if you really want. But who would want that? And by the way, it's hard to tell on that, but that actually isn't just like a black background. There's like this design on the back there. That's really cool. I like the smug mug of Steve Gibson. I just love that. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Very lesson. Very lesson.